All right, good evening everyone and welcome to Kabila. This is the community, a community of consumer goods entrepreneurs based in Africa. And we are focused on essentially encouraging one another to keep going, to keep doing what we are doing as entrepreneurs. And I want to welcome you and thank you for stopping by, whether you are here live with us or you are going to be listening to this from as a recording. Our core pillars, our values are variety, vibrancy, and veracity. We are a diverse group, that's by variety, and we are vibrant. We are ready to take on the terrain with a lot of resilience, and we believe in veracity, which is trust. We want to build trust that even transcends boundaries. We have a Kabila creed, which you can look at by going to kennethigiri.com/kabila. kennethigiri.com/kabila. And look forward to seeing you stop by. Today we're going to discuss an interesting topic: why we do not buy made in Africa goods. Why do we not buy made in Africa? What are the typical reasons? We're going to explore these reasons, and we're going to give a few examples and generally navigate that space. Typically, what happens here is that we have a short session exploring the topic for myself, and then when people join in the room, they can give their feedback, share their opinions about what about the general topic. So whenever you do join, I would like you to join the be ready to share your thoughts in the conversation. All right, there are about 7 organizations or companies that make cars in Africa. You probably didn't know that. I didn't know that myself until recently. There are about 7 organizations, 7 companies that make cars in Africa. And the truth is, you know the names of all, most of the big names in cars from Europe and Asia, but I can bet that most people listening to my voice right now do not know the names of the cars that are made in Africa. And like I said, I myself just recently learned of them. You have Kantanka in Ghana, which I'm very much familiar with, which was started by a certain professor. They basically do assembly. Most of them, I to the best of my knowledge, do assembly. And frankly speaking, some Ghanaians have embraced the car. I've seen the car being driven by people here in Ghana, and that's great news. There's one called Birkin, which is from, or Bikini or whatever, that is in South Africa. We have Innocent Motors from Nigeria, a well-known one to myself as well. And I do understand that the government even buys from Innocent to some extent, but I cannot confirm that. We also have Kira from Uganda, and Kira is even going into making electric cars as well, from what I gathered. We have Laraki from Morocco. We have and one of the questions that pops up in my mind when I see this happening is, why are African governments not making some of these cars their official cars? Their official cars. I remember back in the 80s when Peugeot had an assembly plant in Kaduna, if I'm not mistaken, or Kaduna or Kano, Nigeria. Most of the government parastatals in Nigeria drove Peugeot cars. That was the 504, the old 504. And I think it's a good thing if a government says, we are going to adopt a locally made car as our official vehicle. It's great to support these companies, but I think there should be more aggression, so to speak, about supporting what is locally made, because that is when you shoot up demand, that makes it worthwhile for the entrepreneurs to keep doing what they're doing and creating a better society for us. Now, I want to share a few opinions I've heard about these locally made cars. I remember back in the day when I first learned about Kantanka and started having a conversation with one of my colleagues about buying a Kantanka. He was of the opinion that he was worried that he would not get parts to buy. How would the maintenance be done? If he were to buy it with a loan, which banks would want to take that kind of risk? All that, you know, conversation was going on. And I recently also was in a conversation with another colleague who I was telling them that Volkswagen was now making cars in Ghana and that it'd be a great idea to buy those that are made here. And his response was he would never buy a locally made car or assembled it, even with the fact that it's a Volkswagen car, that he was not interested in that because obviously he has no trust for the level of expertise that these local engineers could come up with. And I said to myself that that is just it. We have an appetite for some things made abroad. We're not ready to grow what is here. And I will cite the case of the Chinese and other Asian countries who were willing to pass through a period of a little pain in order to make sure that they developed their local competencies. They at the time in this world, whenever you hear something is made in China or Taiwan or Korea, you thought of it as inferior because probably at that time it was inferior to the Europeans, inferior to the Americans. But because they were willing to give a chance, they were willing to give their local entrepreneurs a chance, they have grown to where they are now. Right now, they are highly sought after products, both in terms of cars and other advanced engineering products coming from Asia. And today, Africa has turned from America and Europe to Asia, obviously because it's cheaper. Now, let's come down a bit to those items that are called consumer goods. There are a few elements. Before I go into that, let me just talk about what are the drivers for some of the things that were done in Asia. There are three drivers that I noticed. One is policy. Two is the support of the diaspora. Three is simple share patriotism. Policy means, the government decides we are making a firm decision to support what is our own. And a lot of people, when I have conversations with people because I'm Nigerian, they keep bringing up the fact that Nigeria's government in the time of Obasanjo made turn not to import rice anymore. That has its pros and cons. There are questions around the workability or the reality on ground in that context. But the truth is that that decision was made. And that's the kind of decision that some countries in Asia made about their own internally produced goods. Once the government decides, we are going to back this industry. Our purchases of our procurement in this area will be made locally. The second thing is the diaspora. And I think that the likes of China were very strategic about how they use their diaspora. It was as simple as sending someone out to America to learn in their universities and making sure that they were willing to come back and to contribute to the local economy significantly. And over time, over a period of probably 30 years, China went from, what you might call an underdog to a world power. And for that to happen, a people have to be patriotic. A people have to love their own. So just imagine the scenarios that we find ourselves this day. than an air conditioner made abroad in order to cool yourself. It's like a win-win situation. The appetite we have for that which is locally made is so poor that we are willing to suffer. Welcome, Abigail. Good to see you here again. We are willing to put ourselves in discomfort in order to make sure that we are able to say what we are wearing is from abroad. The same thing with our children. We are willing to buy used clothes from outside the country. Obviously, sometimes they are cheaper. Sometimes they are better quality than what we can find locally. But the point is, the people that chose to grow their economy over a period of suffering, they did it, and we are now buying from them. Now, let me come back to some of the things in terms of consumer goods. Packaging, and this is a big one. The ability to sell the aesthetics of your product, so to speak, first, before even telling people it's good quality. Sometimes you have the product that you produce locally. It is good quality, it is great quality, but the problem is that the aesthetics of it is not attractive enough to pull people in to embrace the quality that you put together in that package. Second thing, customer experience or customer service, or basically an understanding of who the customer is. Let me give one or two examples. I remember I was somewhere, I'll not reveal the identity, but I was having a conversation with them about a product they had shown me or they had done for me. And I was pointing out things in which they had missed it slightly. And for almost every area I point out, the young lad there, he wasn't the owner of the place, the young lad there had an excuse why it was that way. So in his mind, he has positioned his mind in a way that says, look, I know what I'm doing. If you're complaining, that means you don't understand. But the problem with that kind of thinking is that it blocks you from learning as an entrepreneur. You can learn from your customer. You can learn what your customer wants. You can learn and improve. When you improve, the customer will be more encouraged to patronize you. You'll be more encouraged to support your growth, even if you are not there yet compared to foreign country. But you find a lot of local entrepreneurs, they are so hell-bent on proving to the customer that they are right, that they fail to learn from the customer. Customer feedback is critical if we are going to support the local entrepreneurs to grow. That is how other people have grown. That's an example of customer experience, understanding, respecting, and learning from the customer. The third thing is, of course, I've talked about quality, and my argument is that those that we buy from in Asia, at a point, their quality was not there. They had to grow into that quality, and it calls for patriotism, calls for social action. Can we do it in phases? Can we ask ourselves, I will buy 60% of my consumer goods from locally made stuff. When I walk into the shop, I'll look for what is made in Ghana, made in Nigeria, made in Cote d'Ivoire, made in here. Simply because I have the commitment to procure what is made here. The simple thing that says, look, I will buy at least 60%. Then when it improves, when the quality improves, I will do more. I mean, that is a commitment we can make. The second thing is promotion. Being able to say, I want to, if somebody shares their product that, oh, I made this in Nigeria and it's good. I made this in Ghana. I made this in Morocco. I made this in Rwanda, in Kenya. We should be able to say, I'm committed to promoting it, to sharing the advert, to helping other people get to know what. Quite good. So many benefits that I discovered. those kinds of things, they are there. And it now comes to the issue of the balance between patronizing locally made stuff. So the entrepreneurs who are doing good job, good work, they find themselves in a dilemma, either to compromise on the quality or to you can push it on Twitter. It's not on Twitter yet. I can do that. Or to basically, I hope you can still hear me. Or to basically, you know, compromise quality versus price, and that's also a problem. That is a challenge for the entrepreneur, being able to say, can I do this? Can I, you know, lower the price or lower the quality? But that's the problem that is created by the fact that the masses have not fully embraced. The masses have not fully embraced this conversation. Abigail, so I'm not, you know, there's Twitter Spaces, which is a completely different platform. So I'm not sure whether he can listen in directly from Twitter, but I've shared it on Twitter anyway. Yeah, you're welcome once again. So as I was saying, so you see that the entrepreneurs have that dilemma, and that dilemma is created by the fact that they are producing at a small scale, so they don't have the benefit of economies of scale that the likes of China have. So it boils down back to appetite, to patriotism, to promotion, and all that. If we can marry these three areas, being able to say, I want to contribute to growth in my community, my society, my nation, by patronizing locally made, at least 60% of my budget. I want to promote them online. I want to tell other people this is good, buy it, it's local. I want to improve from the entrepreneur side, customer experience, learning from the customer, learning from other people. China's something, and it's not a big bad thing to copy and to improve on it. So these are elements I want to try to push. Pushing that change of appetite from foreign to local, because a lot of our people are doing great stuff. Thoughts while just before we close out this session, Abigail. I hope you can hear me. If you check whether you're muted, if you're unmuted, you can leave the room and come back. Sometimes the audio gives problems like that, because I can't see your audio right now.
What about now?
Yes, great.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay,
good evening.
I was in a meeting with my sibling, so I had to pull out, and I was trying to invite my brother. So he was asking me if this is on Twitter, whether he can join via Twitter, because he said he doesn't have Clubhouse. So I sent him the link. Can he do that? I sent him the link.
Yeah. I don't think he can listen in from Twitter. Twitter has another platform called Twitter Spaces. That's also an audio platform. But if he clicks this link, he'll now be prompted to install Clubhouse. But of course, in today's case, I've set replays on, so you can always replay it.
Oh, okay. But he was saying something about Clubhouse, that he entered Clubhouse through Twitter the other time. That is Twitter that owns Clubhouse. I don't know. Anyway.
Really? I've never heard that before. To be frank. Maybe he'll teach us.
Well, I'll send him the link. I don't know if he'll be able to enter.
Yes,
we go. Well, truth of the matter is, when we started the meeting before you, and then we've been on it, so I've been listening in on two you and my siblings. So, I heard some of the things you said, but what I heard very clearly was we need to like change our appetite or maybe our mindset to, you know, begin to patronize things that are made in Africa, because I think there's improvement and all of that. It's a good one. Even since we talked about it last time, I was thinking about it in terms of wares and all of that, you know. And I'm like, what about children's clothes, you know? You know, all these jeans and tops and, you know, these very simple things that we can wear our kids. Do we really have them in Africa? And are they things that we can easily access, or do we even have those kind of clothing in Africa and all that? So these are some of the things that crosses one's mind to say, okay, how is this, how are we able to solve this, you know? So I don't know, so we're open to learning and all of that. Mm-hmm. So that's my
what I think about. Okay, I know that it's a tricky and difficult situation, because it's like a pattern we have to now unlearn, and like I said, it can be a long-term journey to move and change our habit. Because the truth is that we were dressing up before jeans came, and we can easily make clothing from Ankara and Co for our children that we need. But and the truth is that if somebody can also decide, I want to make jeans in Africa, and it's fine. But the point is, if that person starts, will he get enough volume to sustain that business? So you see that, first of all, the attitude and the appetite should also change to even make it attractive for someone to invest here. That investment, it can be in two ways. It can be in a way of attracting in those who are making these things to do it locally, or attracting African entrepreneurs to do the work locally. But whichever one. That for that to work, you have to love yourself first. But we find out in ourselves that we love everybody but ourselves. The Africans, they love every other person. They want every other person to succeed. We're all working hard to make sure other people succeed. All working hard. Mine the mineral, sell it to them. Harvest the cocoa, sell it to them. Let them the heads of cow, you know, extract the skin, sell it to them, then buy to buy a leather bag from Italy is probably 80 times the cost, the amount of leather that comes from a single cow, which is you that used to make the bag. This was a conversation that was in another forum that I was in. So these things are happening, and the currencies of African nations keep plummeting. Mm-hmm. The economy keeps getting worse, but we still love our neighbors more than ourselves.
I think that we actually need to be more intentional in like doing actually what China and some of those other countries did, like Singapore, going to those places, learning and coming back home to replicate, and then put those things that are indigenous to us, weave it in and make it unique and authentic. That's what I think we should do, because there's a lot in Africa, really. We need to go out there and learn and then bring it home and weave in that indigenous African thing. God has blessed us with a lot of things, with a lot of ideas that if we mix it up or get it improved, we will see that it will even beat the others hands down. So that's what I think we should do. We need to be deliberate in, you know, going out there, learning and learning well, and then bringing it home and, you know, shoot. That's what I think will help us. Sorry?
I had going out there, that was the last thing we had. The line cut.
Oh, okay. I said we need to go out there, learn well, and then come back, you know, implement what we have learned within our African thing to eat, and then it shoots. The sky will just be our starting point. Because others have done it and then they succeeded. So we will too be able to. And God has blessed us. Africa, there's something about us with the way we are, the way we do things, our culture, and our style, whether in dressing or in any area, you know, we're just unique. We're unique. Africa is unique on its own, just like the other people are also unique. But we need to, you know, step up in learning the standards, okay, and then improving, bringing it home, and then improve our own style, you know, and make it something that would really fly, really be of international standard and all that. So that's what I think one of the things we can do. Yeah.
All right, great. So let me just lay some emphasis on one side now. Now, a lot of times when we say we in these conversations, we're actually thinking about what the government can do. We're thinking about the fact that we have a leadership crisis that doesn't seem to be seeing the opportunities and the things that need to be done. We're thinking about who is going to call those shots. But let me also tilt the angle to what we as a people should do. And that's why I keep talking about this appetite matter. Can we decide, as people that says, as a consumer, I can decide and say, look, when I go to the grocery shop, I'm going to look for things made here. Because those ones, it's easy. It's not like rocket science. It's easy. I can find a lot of things for my household that are made here, instead of always going out to look for things that are made outside the nation. That's one part, on the part of consumers. On the part of local entrepreneurs, particularly in the consumer goods space, give attention to key elements like packaging, like learning from the customer, improving, so that you're not looking at a long-term situation where you're able to now compete with what is happening globally, because that is the way you keep the value circulating within the nations. So I wanted to also look at it more from what we can do. Let's assume that the government has completely failed us. We can't force them to change policies. We can't force them to drive FDI, etc. Even though some nations are trying and a lot of entrepreneurs look at it doing stuff. But I think that one aspect that needs to be addressed well is the appetite of the majority of the population.
It's doable. It's doable. I would say that someone like me, I have started that. Like my last baby, you know, what inspired me in doing what I did sometime in March, that seminar and all, was because I never fed her any store-bought food. I never, baby food, never. It was the rice, the beans, the yam, the egg, the potato, the sweets, and, you know, I just blend them, you know, make them into purees, mix with milk, and I give her. That was all I gave her. From A to Z, she never, you know. And this is something we're trying to sell to mothers, but a lot of them are not buying it. And I don't know whether it's a knowledge gap. I had a friend. We worked in Airtel together, and she came to my house, and we were talking about. She said, "Oh, Abigail, I never knew." And then that, in fact, she said her son's school, the crush, an Igbo woman told her, "Look, all this una medebede, we don't do that here. We give them all crap." You know, and she felt, "What is this woman talking about?" And all of that, you know. But somehow now she's regretting if she knew better. Because then it was the Geba, it was the all those names and all of that, foreign foods. And I mean, I told her, I said, look, my daughter, the last one, never in the hospital, apart from when we had accidents, and then my husband was in the hospital for months and we're going in and out. And for a baby to be exposed, you know, to the hospital environment, she definitely get infected. That was the only time. Apart from that, even when we traveled for further surgeries, she didn't have any problem. It was all natural food, you know. So for me, I'm like, and even, you know, when we dig deep into these things, you will see that actually it's for our own good. Because even the World Health Organization had advised mothers, once a baby is in six months, you start introducing natural herbs.
Okay,
but a lot of us know, if you're not eating the gebers and all the, what are those names? If you're not eating, you're not, you're a local mom, I mean. And these things are expensive, you know. So, like, I agree with you completely. We need to change our appetite and then mentality, because these things are okay. If we're even talking about consumer goods now, I hear a lot of people ask me, and I don't know, maybe it's a niche I'll have to create, what is the shelf life of your product? And I'm like, I don't use preservatives, and I really am not looking forward to that. Maybe if I am able to stumble into natural preservatives, maybe yes, but not anything preservatives. I want you to eat natural, you know. So we need to really change our mindsets. It's very key mindset, because you know, we, because of this, I don't know what to call it, is it African mentality, or if you are not eating the Oyibo food or buying the Oyibo cloth, you are not yet there, you are just local, you are just, you know. We need to change that. We're really blessed and all of that. We need to change that, really. And we've seen it over the years. The Ankaras, things that are coming out of it, even the Oyibos have started joining us because it looks good. And fashion designers are really, you know, making these things out, the way they design the outfits and all that, stone it up. You know, it comes out very lovely and very regal, you know. So there's a lot, really. Mindsets are talking to ourselves that legal, this is not... You know, it's for good and all of that. It doesn't make you any less. Rather, it makes you unique. It makes us unique as Africans. It's something I would drive, just like you have said, look at, okay, as an entrepreneur coming up one, look at packaging and all of that. As I grow, believing God and praying God, look at packaging so that my product can compete with the one coming from the US and even beat it, you know. So...
to deep it for the entrepreneurs as well. All right, so we've done 33 minutes. We'll just have to close it out here, and we'll come back next week with another topic. But I think I'll keep pushing these thoughts in some way or the other as we go along. Another thing is that I'm thinking of changing this time slot because of a clashing meeting which I have to be in. So what days suit you, since you're the only one here today? What evenings do well for you?
Well, I think I'm beginning to fit into this one, even though my family meeting is Sundays, you know. I'm beginning to, like, yes, squeeze myself into it. So for me, I think it's fine for me personally. Is it because people aren't responding?
No. There's another meeting I have that I have by 7 on Sundays. I joined a group. So okay. I'm thinking whether I should, because it's Salah Duru to his group. So I'm thinking whether to shift and then so that I can be part of those meetings. But let's see how it goes. I'll keep it on what I can.
Okay.
I can.
Okay, 7 till when? Okay, 7, your own 7, right?
Yeah, it's also 7. It's also 7 on Sundays. So I'll think through that. Don't worry. So I'll see.
Okay.
All right.
Is it a paid group?
No, it's not a paid group. It's not a paid group. You are interested?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, I'll send you the
on. Is it on Clubhouse or where?
No. It's the meetings are on Zoom.
Okay.
the meetings are on Zoom, so it's mm-hmm. it's quite it can be quite involving as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's and then registration is like it's like a whole leadership group. So I'll just send it to you now, and then you can check it out and see.
It's not free.
No, it is quite free.
Okay.
But you have, to register. There's a lot of some level of data collection. You have a dashboard.
Okay.
It's easy. Yeah.
Okay. So it's basically leadership. Or this state is the African thing and all of that.
Generally. It's not... It's general leadership, because it's more focused on self-actualization than of course the social impact in the context of anybody's personal space, so to speak.
Mm.
But it's not like Africa focused or Nigeria focused, even though there's a lot of Nigeria in it. But the point is for the individuals who are involved to become more useful leaders. Okay then, Abigail. So thank you very much for always being here. Say that again.
It's one. I didn't get what the last phrase of your sentence. You said it's more of the.
No, I said the whole idea is for individuals to become better at leadership, and make impact in their own space. So it's not like Africa focused as much as it is individual focused.
Okay, that's fine. I'll appreciate that. It's really a pleasure, really coming. You know, it's one of my goals for the year to join a group where, you know, like an entrepreneurial group. I write my goals daily. So every time, I don't know if I've mentioned it to you. So I write it because I read this book on goals by Brian Tracy, and he said, goals are not what you write once and you just leave it and end of year you go carry it and you've done nothing. You have to be connecting with it. In fact, that at some point you have to be doing it daily, and then you write it as if you're already doing the thing. And the truth of the matter is working for me. It's really working. I'm drawing those things. So if I'm desiring to be a better person or a better wife, I won't say, I'm going to be a better wife in 2022. Now I'm writing, I'm a better wife in 2022. And it's working for me. So that's why I make out time for this, because one of my goals. So God is helping me. So I actually want to appreciate you for that, because it's solving, it's achieving a goal for me.
I missed some things you said. So which one are you referring to now?
I said that this clubhouse, this meeting we have, this Kabila, that it's helping me achieve my goal. All right.
Great,
my goal, my goal of belonging to a group in entrepreneurial space and all of that. So it's helping, because when you do that, it helps you to learn, unlearn and relearn, and you know, get better and all of that. So it's actually helping me to achieve that goal, you know. So I'm the one that is supposed to be thanking you for driving that, you know. So that's it, basically.
All right, good one. All right, thank you so much. Thanks for the feedback. We shall keep doing what we can to help people.
I'm sure too. I'm sure you also have yours. That's why you keep doing it, whether anybody's there or not. You can.
That's how you grow something. You have to. You have to be resilient.
Yeah, consistency. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. All
right.
Thank you.
Four, three, two, one, and see you next week.